Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying the last parak of Sefer Yecheskel, Parak Memchet, Chapter 48. Just like the river flows out of the Beit HaMikdash to water all the land, we too turn our attention now in the last parak of our Sefer to Eretz Yisrael as a whole and the division of Eretz Yisrael into Shvatim, into tribes. A new entering of Israel is taking place, a new division of the land, like in the time of Yehoshua. However, we have a number of changes. One change is the placement of all the Shvatim, says Pasuk Aleph. Ve'ele shmot ha-shvatim mikzei safona al yad derach chatlon lavo chamat chatzar inan gvul damesek safona al yad chamat v'hayu lo pa'at kadim hayam dan echad. These are the names of the tribes from the north end, besides the way of Chetzlon to the entrance of Hamat, Chatzar Inan on the border of Damascus, northward, besides Hamas, they shall have their sides east and west. The first one is Dan. We hear now the northern border, but we're going to hear the southern border also. And what we learn is, as we discussed in our last parak with the Gevulot, with the territory of Israel, all the Shvatim will live within the original territory of Eretz Israel. There will be no Shvatim on the other side of the Yarden, of the Jordan River. What happened in the Midbar, which is recorded in Bamidbar, Perek 32, when Reuven, Gad, and half of Shevet Menashe requested to live in the lush land of Aver HaYarden, the land over the side of the Jordan River, that incident will not happen again. All of the tribes will live together. There was some tension when those 2.5 tribes asked Moshe if they could stay here in this beautiful area with lush, wonderful, fertile land and not go into Eretz Yisrael. However, there was also at that time a resolution. The men of the 2.5 tribes promised to go fight, chamushim lifnei achichem, armed in front of their brothers, tied together in the destiny of the warfare of the Jewish people. At the time, they did not seclude themselves in their own fertile land. However, there are a few instances in Tanakh where the tension between the geographical locations does arise. One is at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, when the tribes living inside Israel proper almost go to war against Reuven, Gad, and Chatzi Menashe for building a great mizbeach on the banks of the Jordan River, which they perceived as a mark of separation. That incident was resolved, but it's indicative of the tension that existed between these two locations. Another and worse incident comes up in the time of the Shofet Yiftach, and that one has a less positive ending. Yiftach, who was from the half of Menashe that lived on Aver HaYarden, is the leader at this time. He's the Shofet, and he's in charge of the battle against Ammon. When he is victorious, he is accosted by men from the Shevet Ephraim, a mainland tribe, who wanted to know why they weren't asked to join the battle. An argument ensues, and the result is a civil war between the two brother tribes, separated by a river. There's deep tension, and 42,000 people from Ephraim die at the hands of the warriors of Menashe, who, when they would catch them, would test their lineage by asking them to say the word Shibboleth. Yecheskel's vision has none of this separation. All 12 tribes live on the mainland. There will be no lingering tensions based on geography. They will be united as one people. Another change is the placement of the Shvatim themselves. Instead of being divided into various shapes and spread out all over the country, the Shvatim are stacked into rows. Each Shevet has the same shape. It's going to be a nachala, a portion that is a long rectangle that stretches from the east to the west of the country, and each of the nachalot are the same size. So you can imagine it, it's almost like boxes, one on top of the other, almost like, not even like a grid, really just rectangles striped over the whole country. The order of the Shvatim, starting from the north, is Dan, then Asher, Naphtali, Menashe, Ephraim, Reuven, and Yehuda. The stacking of the Nachalot is interrupted in the middle of the country when they reach the 13th section of land, meaning there are 12 for the tribes, and then there's a 13th. And this 13th, we've already discussed, is the Trumat HaKodesh, this special section of land dedicated to the holy elements of the country that we discussed earlier in Parak 46. And says the description of this 13th piece of land. Va'al gvul Yehuda, mifa'ad kadim, ad pe'ad yama, tiyeh ha'truma, asher tarimu chamisha ve'esrim elef rochav ve'orech, ke'achad ha'chalakim, mifa'ad kadima, ad pe'ad yama, v'haya ha'mikdash v'tocho. So on the border of the tribe of Yehuda, from the east to the west side, shall be the truma, shall be this dedication, this offering that you shall offer. Not an offering of food, and not an offering of animal, not an offering of flower, but an offering of land. A land that's set aside. It will be 25,000 amot in breadth and in length, and it will be also from the east to the west side of the country, and in the middle of it will be the Beit HaMikdash. Like the portions of the Shvatim, this parcel of land also reaches from the east to the west of the country, and in it is the Mikdash, surrounded by the Kohanim, the portion for the Levim, the portion for the Nasi, the king, or the special leader, and the special capital city. Unlike the time of Yehoshua, as we discussed earlier, the Kohanim and Levim, they do own land inside this special portion that they are able to pass down to their children. Continuing south, after this holy land comes Shevet Binyamin, then Shimon, Yisachar, Zebulun, and finally Gad occupies the southernmost section of Israel. You'll note that in the time of Yehoshua, the city of Yerushalayim was between the portions, between the Nachalot of Yehuda and Binyamin, right smack in the middle on their border. And Yehuda was one of the sons of Leah, and Binyamin was one of the sons of Rachel. So in that way, there was almost a nod towards not putting Jerusalem, not putting Yerushalayim in either the section of the children of Rachel or the section of the children of Leah, but that they would share it. Now we're going even further. No Shevet lays claim to the Mikdash, or to the cities of Kohanim and Levim, or to the palace of the Nasi, or to the capital city. Those institutions, in the vision of Yechezkel, will remain completely untouched by tribal loyalty. They belong to everyone and no one. The institutions of religion and politics will not have to be beholden to a particular Shevet or a particular cultural way of life. Like the equality between the Nachalot, there's equality in the prominence of the placement. No one owns it. No one owns the Kohanim. No one owns the Levim, no one owns the Nasi, and no one owns the Beit HaMikdash. In contrast, however, the city, the capital city, is owned. But instead of it being in one tribe's portion, the city is not owned by no one, but by everyone. And the Pasuk describes the 12 gates that enter the city and says, I'm reading now from Psukim Lamed Aleph through Lamed Dalid, Sha'arei Ha'ir al Shemot Shevtei Yisrael, the gates of the city were named after the tribes of Israel. Sha'arim Shlosha Tzafona, there were three gates in the north, Sha'ar Reuven Echad, one was the gate of Reuven, Sha'ar Yehuda Echad, one was the gate of Yehuda, Sha'ar Levi Echad, and one was the gate of Levi. Ba'al Pe'at Kadima, now on the east side, you have the gates Sha'ar Yosef Echad, Sha'ar Binyamin Echad, Sha'ar Dan Echad. One was the gate of Yosef, one was the gate of Binyamin, and one is the gate of Dan. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. On the southern side, you also had three gates. Sha'ar Shimon Echad, Sha'ar Yisachar Echad, Sha'ar Zevulun Echad. The gates of Shimon, Yisachar, and Zevulun. Pasuk Lamed Dalid. Pe'at Yama. On the west, also three gates. Sha'ar Gad Echad, Sha'ar Asher Echad, Sha'ar Naphtali Echad. The gates of Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. I just want to point out a couple of things about these gates. The three gates on four sides of the city remind us of the way the tribes camped in the Midbar, three on each side with the Mishkan in the middle. In fact, the way the entire country is set up seems to be modeled on the encampment in the Midbar, the Beit HaMikdash in the middle, the Kohanim and Levim around it, and the tribes above and below. The life in Eretz Yisrael will all focus on this land, this Terumat HaKodesh, this offering of holy land, the Beit HaMikdash and its caretakers in the middle, and that will be the focus of the entire land. A second point here is that in the gates of the capital city, we see one final unification, and that is the unification of Menasheh and Ephraim, who, while they each have their own nachalot and portions of land, they are the double portion that's given to Yosef. In the city of Jerusalem, in this capital city, they come together as the tribe of Yosef, another layer of renewal, of reunification, of reconciliation. Yechezkel stands outside the city and he looks back, takes one final look at this beautiful capital city, and we, the reader, take one final look at the book of Yechezkel and the land of Israel, divided, settled, and at peace. The last phrase of the last pasuk of the Sefer is a declaration of the name of the city that lies here in the center of the country, which is now divided into plots. And says the pasuk, Pasuk Lamed Hei, verse 35, Saviv Shmona Asar Elef, there are 18,000 reeds around the city, that's the measurement, V'shem Ha'ir, Ha'ir Meyom, and the name of the city from this day on will be Hashem Shama. Hashem is there. Such an interesting way to end the book of Yechezkel. What happened to the city of Jerusalem? We've been waiting to hear that beloved name, Yerushalayim. And in the last word of the city, we want that name, Yerushalayim. And the book doesn't give us the closure that we want. Rashi brings two answers to this question. The first, based on Targum Yonatan, states that Hashem Shama, the name of the city, Hashem is there, is actually the original name of the city that Avraham called it. Says Rashi, Yom She'akad Avraham et Yitzchak b'no, Sham Shekaralo Yir'ah. Avraham called that place Hashem Yir'ah, Hashem will see, when he brought Yitzchak to the Akedah, to the sacrifice. And then that word Yir'ah was merged with the name of the city at the time, Shalem, and it became Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim. But now, says Rashi, we're returning to Avraham's original pronouncement, Hashem Shama, Hashem Yir'ah, this is the place. This is the place that Hashem is seen. That's one answer to the question. And it bespeaks a certain originality, a certain return to our roots, that this city is taking the name, not that was there, but the name that Avraham called it at his moment of greatest sacrifice. Rashi brings a second answer to this question. Says Rashi, V'yesh od liftor, perhaps also we can explain, B'shem ha'ir yiyel le'atid miyom b'niya ulahalan yikra'ala Hashem Shama. That this city in the future, from the day that they built it, and further, they'll call it Hashem Shama. Perhaps this city that really is so different from the city of Yerushalayim, and the city is just not the same, and maybe it needs its own name. It's named here by Hashem to tell the people Hashem is there. He's not leaving. The gate is closed behind him. You are here to stay forever. I'd like to offer a third approach to this question of the name of the city. We leave Yechezkel here in the middle of his vision. He's still in Israel. The other times that Yechezkel went to Jerusalem, he returned. And we saw what he said when he came back. But now he's still in Israel. Here, looking at the city, looking at the land, hearing the name of this city. Yechezkel is still reveling in this vision, in the peacefully divided land, in the unity of the tribes. His feet are still wet from the overflowing river that healed the city of Sodom and brings the kavod of Hashem to connect with the people. But sometime soon, after the Sefer closes, Yechezkel will be yanked back to his home, which is not in Hashem Yir'ah, and not in Hashem Shama, and not in Yerushalayim, but on the Har Kfar, in Babylonia. And he'll be yanked back to his people, who are not woken up. They're still dry bones. His people who are not yet redeemed al Kiddush Hashem, who are making their way, plodding through the exile. And perhaps this is Yechezkel's final message to them and to us. Hashem Shama. Hashem is there. Keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your eyes on Eretz Yisrael. The Geula is yet to come. We started our Sefer with the chariot, Hashem's awesome chariot, moving out of Yerushalayim, turning its wheels towards Galut, towards Babel. Over the course of the Sefer, we began to understand why the chariot had to move. There was terrible, terrible corruption in Yerushalayim, not just in the building of the Beit HaMikdash and how people treated it, but the whole society that was going to be destroyed. Yechezkel was chosen at that time, at the time of the moving chariot, to prophesy to the people in Israel and prepare them for the impending destruction and for their role in the rebuilding. Now Yechezkel sees Eretz Yisrael so beautifully divided and united, the lack of corruption among its leaders, the kavod of Hashem that flows out of the Beit HaMikdash and heals the people and connects with them, the river that brings water and comfort, and with this city of unity, with the name of the city of unity, he gives his people one last message. Hashem Shama. Hashem is there. This perfect vision, this perfect society, this perfect connection with Hashem is just waiting for you. It's now in your hands to get there, to emulate it, to long for it, and in the process, to make yourselves worthy of it. In chapter 11, Yechezkel ended his earlier vision of Jerusalem with words of comfort to the people in Galut. Says Yechezkel in chapter 11, verse 16, Pasuk Tet Zayin, L'chein Amar, Ko Amar Hashem Elokim, therefore say, so says Hashem, Ki herchaktim bagoyim, ki hafitzutim ba'aratzot, when you are flung off amongst the nation and you're scattered amongst the countries, Va'ahi lahem l'mikdash ma'at, I will be for them to a small mikdash, a small sanctuary. Ba'aratzot asher ba'usham, to the countries that they have come there. It's up to them to realize that the dream is just over the horizon, to take those mikdash ma'ats, those small sanctuaries, and to use them for good, to better themselves, to maintain the ideas of unity, of holiness, and the fight against corruption. And ultimately, it will end not in a mikdash ma'at, not in a small sanctuary, but in the mikdash gadol that stands on the Har Gadol, on that high mountain that's higher than all the other mountains, in a unified country where Hashem's chariot can return and finally rest, fill the land with Kavod Hashem, Hashem's glory, and lock the door behind him. Hashem Shama, it's right there. Yechezkel is not an easy book. There are chapters that are hard to read because they are so painful. There are chapters that are hard to read because they are so esoteric. And there are chapters that are hard to read because they're just hard to understand what they're saying. And yet, there are so many chapters that are hopeful, that are clear, and are mesmerizing. There are chapters that our recent ancestors could never have believed have already come true in our lifetimes. Overall, Yechezkel is what the Gemara Baba Batra categorized him to be, one that begins with tochacha and ends with nechama, one that starts with destruction but ends in consolation. In the heady days of Jerusalem's rebellion, Yechezkel was not drawn in, and he focused his society on the evils that lay right beneath the surface. And now, even in the darkest part of Galut, Yechezkel teaches us to never, never let go of our hope. As Naftali Herz-Imber wrote in response to the dried bones, Od lo avda tikvatenu, we will never give up our hope. Thank you for learning together, Le'ilu Nishmas Barbara Atlas Brachabas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.